Hey, Shit Show fans, thank you so much for tuning into this very special episode of the Boston Shit Show featuring the one and only Fitz Dog, Greg Fitzsimmons. See him at Laugh Boston this weekend, September 24th to the 26th. For tickets, call 617-72-LAUGH or go to laughboston.com. Also, special thanks to The Good American, Charles Rivers. Thank you so much, sir. Listen to The Good American Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WEMFradio.com. And for all past episodes of that glorious show, go to thegoodamericancollective.blogspot.com. Now enjoy your tits off to this episode of the Boston Shit Show with the Fitz Dog, bitch.
I'm 100% Irish, and I resent how we're treated on our day. You know, St. Patrick's Day comes, and every other race comes together to honor us by saying, hey, let's get shit-faced, throw up, and punch each other in the face. You know, like Irish people do. It's racist. It's bullshit. And it should stop. We don't do that to you on your day. Happy Yom Kippur. What are you going to do on Yom Kippur? I'm going to head down to the bank and check my balances. What are you up to? It's just, it would be wrong. But for the Irish, it's fine. How was your Chinese New Year? Great. Had a senseless automobile accident. What'd you do? Yeah, now it's not funny. Sure, now it's insulting. Yeah, laugh it up, black guy. How was your Black History Month? I showed up late, missed the whole goddamn thing. I can't believe it. Again and again and again. Oh, yeah. Laugh it up, Mexican guy. How was your Cinco de Mayo? Great, I bought some fake Timberlands. I hung out in front of the Home Depot all afternoon. For the Irish, though, yeah, don't worry about it. Just shit all over us.
Welcome to the Shit Show with everybody's favorite Jew.
That's me.
Another shitty episode, direct from me to you.
Not exactly direct.
Drinking some whiskey and living the dream.
Not a great dream.
Doing the things that everybody needs.
Priorities.
Yes, the Shit Show. It's a shitty fucking show.
Shitty fucking show.
And if you don't like it, fuck yourself is where to go. This is the Shit Show. The new guest every week. The host is barely adequate. Wait, how'd that fucking go? I fucked it up. Best? Wait,
it's kind of foreshadowing.
This is the Shit Show. With always our new guest. The host is barely adequate.
Hey, I'm doing my fucking best.
That's me again.
The Shit Show. The Shit Show. It's the Shit Show. It's the Shit Show.
It's the Boston Shit Show.
It's the Shit Show.
The Boston Shit Show.
So he just got to be
Shit Show. Enjoy the show. Not safe for work.
So thanks for doing this interview. This is for Laugh Boston and the Good American podcast, as well as the Boston Shit Show podcast. So we really thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Yeah, you're going to be coming here in Boston in a couple weeks. Is that so?
Right. It's going to be, I don't have the dates in front of me.
The 24th to the 26th, I believe.
Okay.
The last time you were here in Boston, we had you on the show, the Big Nez Show. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, that we're those guys.
Okay. The huge black guy.
Right. Yeah, the huge black guy.
Right. Yeah, well, for a black guy, not that huge, but, you know.
So you'll be in Boston in a couple weeks. How often have you found yourself, you know, doing stand-up here in Boston?
Not that often, actually, because, I do it once a year. I do a show at Boston University. That's where I graduated from, and I come back and I do the show for the graduating students in May. And then Laugh Boston, I think I've only been there once, maybe twice. I think only once. And then I've done the Wilbur Theater a couple times. But, you know, considering I started out of Boston, it's just, you know, there were, before Laugh Boston, there weren't really too many clubs in town. You know, they kind of dried up. So for a lot of guys, we'd like to come back more, but thankfully, there's Laugh Boston. Now we've got a place to come.
Absolutely. I mean, Laugh Boston is probably one of the better clubs that I've seen in Boston in many years. And, you know, it's definitely held its own for the last, I think it's going on its third year, I think. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, actually, you know, you go way back in terms of the podcast market and everything, being on podcasts, making your way to satellite radio. What do you think as far as, you know, getting into the podcast market? How has that been beneficial towards your career in having your own show?
Well, first of all, creatively, it's the greatest thing in the world because, like yesterday, I went to my office. I had some notes of stuff I wanted to talk about. I hit record, and I talked for about an hour, and then I just emailed the file to my producer, who put it on iTunes, and all of a sudden it's up today, and, you know, 100,000 people have listened to it. So it's just, I can say anything I want. Nobody tells me what I can and can't do. I can do it as often as I want. And then you know, there's advertising that comes in, which is great. I had two ads yesterday on the show, and then when I come out to the club, people show up, and they're very committed listeners. You know, they're people that are used to hearing me talk in a very intimate, personal way, and so when they come out to see me, it's almost like we already have a relationship.
Well, it seems I'm still trying to wrap my head around the whole podcast, you know, model. I mean, we're doing it. I've been doing one for 3 years. I'm, you know, obviously not in the complete national, you know, I'm not a national comic or anything like that. I'm more of a local journalist, but I am reaching out to more of a national audience. And it's really interesting how to, you know, like you said, I mean, you're reaching people that you have no idea who they are. But when you do meet them, it's almost like they've already met you through that podcast. Do you feel, you know, when you also do the Howard Stern, you do a show on the Howard Stern Network, does that vary from what you can get away with in a podcast still, even though it's satellite, or?
No, there's no parameters on what I can and can't say. And, you know, certainly Howard's channel is not known for being prudish. but there's also an awareness when you're on Howard's channel that, you know, you're trying to appeal to Howard's listeners.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is Howard's listeners, so. I don't know that I'm 100% myself because I want the show to do well, and I'm thinking a little bit about who's listening. And with the podcast, I think the people that are listening are people that solely like me. You know, it's more
selective
of what I put out there that they like. So it's, I think, even more free.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the perfect medium, aside from being on stage, for a comic to be able to brand themselves, their personality, whether it's working out new material or whatever, you know, through the podcast itself.
Right. I think that, you know, you've got, with the internet now, you've got all kinds of freedoms that you that are lacking on mainstream TV, mainstream radio, even in the press. And so, you know, if you're somebody who can be really engaged in blogging regularly or podcasting, then, you know, people notice, and I think they appreciate that what you're doing is you know, the freest form of media that we have today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
I think podcasting is kind of like doing stand-up itself. Like, you got to keep it current.
Can the other guy talk now?
That is, yeah, that's, you. I'm sorry, let's turn it over to Josh Rosenberg.
Fuck's sake.
fucking amateurs.
So you got the Jew and the black guy?
No, I'm not black.
The black guy's not here, come on.
No, the black guy, he's not doing radio anymore, but.
not in this neighborhood.
No, we got the Jewish guy who was on the who engineered for the black guy.
No, I was videotaping your interview that morning.
Oh, okay.
I was the short little stout Hebrew fella walking around getting in your face. I think podcasting is like stand up itself. Like, you got to keep current with it, and you got to keep putting them out. Like, you can't, like, you need to get on stage as frequently as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I do the podcast twice a week, and I think I've probably missed the second podcast maybe twice last year. Otherwise, I just really, you know, I have so many people that I want to get on, and I don't have enough shows in the year that I can get me in, and then I still like to leave room to do some of them alone. So, you know, what happened is I have this great company called 16 Mile that's been working with me, and they bring me a lot of guests, actors that are out promoting movies that I would have never been able to book myself. And those are mixed in with the guys like, you know, Bob Saget and Norm Macdonald that I know, that I bring in. And so it's a good mix of people.
So you actually have, like, you actually have somebody out there doing, you know, the public relations for you, bringing in guests and all that. I mean, you know,
Well, it's not public relations. It's just a booking company. They book, you know, like Soup and a couple of the TV shows. And so they their job is to book comedians on TV shows, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you've been doing it for a couple of years. Who was like the craziest guest that you've had on the podcast?
Oh, Bob Zemuda, without a doubt.
Oh.
No, he was the guy that was Andy Kaufman's right-hand
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. Played Tony Clifton a couple?
And, yeah, Tony mm-hmm. Clifton. So he comes on the podcast, and, you know, we're talking. We had a really great talk, and he's a great storyteller. And then I sort of, like, took him to task a little bit about how he's putting this book out about Andy Kaufman still being alive and this whole conspiracy. And I said, you know, I don't know how that would sit with his family. They're probably not psyched that you're dragging his name through this whole conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of like started to heat up, and it turned into a fight.
Hmm.
And he's screaming, and he threw a chair over, and he stormed off the interview.
Wasn't it Kaufman's sister or maybe brother a few years ago that was that you know, flirted with the idea that Andy was still alive, maybe?
I don't know about that. I know that Bob had a book out. He put out one book about Andy years ago. It was pretty successful.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out this second book that was specifically about him still being alive.
And I mean, it's when you think about it, if we learned like in a week from now or whatever that Andy was alive, it wouldn't be much of a surprise based on his humor and the, you know, the
right.
shtick that he's pulled.
Right.
So
hoaxing
exactly.
and all that, yeah.
That'd be the ultimate joke, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
got
I mean,
you.
That would definitely be the greatest, you know, stunt of all time.
Fake your death for 30 years.
I mean, I've done the same thing with my career. I pretended that my career ended about 5 years ago,
uh-huh.
and people are buying it.
Well, I hear
that the industry is completely believing it.
Totally.
It must
it.
Be very therapeutic for you, though, to do something like that. I'm sure.
Oh,
yeah.
It's been great to have this time off.
Uh-huh.
So should we get Fitzsimmons on the show? No, I thought he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, people didn't care anymore.
You know, do you find yourself, I mean, you started off, you know, in your involvement with media, television and whatnot as a producer and a writer. Are you still heavily involved in writing as well? Or?
Yeah, I do some head writing, and I actually show run sometimes. So I just did the iHeartRadio Music Awards, mm-hmm. which was this past spring, and that was a big award show. So it's about, you know, 6 or 8 weeks of really hard work, and then mm-hmm. you do the award show, and then you're done. And then I was the showrunner on the Carson Daly's Live from Times Square thing on New Year's Eve. So I'll pick up, like, you know, 3 times a year or so, I'll pick up a writing job and do that. But I try not to staff on shows full-time because then I don't have time to do the podcast and the stand-up.
Right, right. How often are you on? Like, do you find yourself on the road consistently doing stand-up? Is that something that you really enjoy, or is it something that you do in order to promote what you're doing?
Well, I've got to do it because, you know, in order to be, you know, a good comedian or a comedian that I feel, I mean, I wouldn't feel like I was using my potential if I wasn't doing long sets regularly. And you can't just stay in L.A. and do sets. You got to go out and do an hour 5 nights in a row and
mm-hmm.
Really work on new material. So I go out, like, I catered around my family's schedule. So in the summers, I don't go out very much because they're out of school. And then now it's the fall, so I'm just banging out weekend after weekend. And then I'll take off for a month around Christmas, and I'm there for all their plays and birthdays and Mother's Day. You know, there's a lot of working around schedules with my stand-up dates.
You know, you had won the a jury award for best comedian from HBO. What is that? What is the jury award?
Well, HBO had a comedy festival in Aspen every year, and they would invite big comedians out to perform. And then I was given the award for best comedian at the festival that year, so that was a big honor. And it gave me, it gives you, like, you know, you get these little boosts in your career every once in a while where all of a sudden, you know, you win an award and all the networks want to meet with you and maybe you get a television deal. So, you know, these festivals are really great.
So you said you only, like, you'll do like an hour a night, like 5 times a week. You never just like stop into a club and just work on a new joke or something? Or swing by an open mic,
like,
surprise them?
Yeah, like, I'm not on the road this week, so I'm in L.A. doing shows. But, you know, they're 15-minute sets. But I'm doing 2 tonight, 3 tomorrow night, 2 Friday night, I think 4 on Saturday night. So I run around and I just bang them out.
You know, how did you find your way like into that circuit of like doing satellite radio? I mean, you know, before, was there a point where you felt that, you know, you weren't really encompassed by the right people in show business? Was there any point or a particular person who was?
Yeah, without a doubt, Howard Stern. Like when I won that jury award, they brought me onto the Howard Stern show, and they tried me out, and then it turned out that Jackie the Joke Man had left, and they were looking for somebody to replace him. So they had a bunch of comics come in, and we all spent a lot of days hanging out on the show, and then it basically came down to between me and Artie in the end, and he actually got the job. He was the best.
Did they settle it with a wrestling match?
Yeah, right. It was butt naked, grease wrestling.
You're giving me a chubby, Greg.
Right, but that basically, you know, Stern has been really instrumental in keeping my name out there, and he's somebody that's really beloved in Hollywood, so I'll get meetings sometimes with companies just because they want to meet me because I know Howard.
Mm-hmm. I just watched your Life on Stage.
Oh, cool.
Phenomenal. And
well, thank you very much.
I told you this when you were on the Big Nez show, so I'm sure you remember. Your Comedy Central Presents was the first thing I ever saw on Comedy Central.
Oh, no shit.
And,
yeah, wow.
Extra shit. And it kind of inspired me to eventually start doing stand-up myself. So I thank you for that.
Wow, that's really great to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, he's not so bad at it, you know, even if he does open mics on Saturday afternoons.
Well, how far is he going to go if I'm his hero? Think about it.
I'm doing an open mic on the steps of the post office occasionally.
Porch Fest, I think they call that.
Yeah, but so Boston's got a lot of rooms now, right? You got a little open mic night? And
yeah, there's a good circuit up here.
Well, I've seen a few, smaller showcases, but like I said, with Laugh Boston and a lot of the open mics, I mean, there's definitely a platform here in Boston for comics. Schools like Emerson College, I believe they just started this year a degree for comedy writing.
I want to teach that.
You're going to teach
it. I want to retire and become a professor of comedy.
You know what, man? You probably could at this point because it's acknowledged. I mean, of all the people that have gone to Emerson College, you know, I mean, a lot of great comics and writers have come from there. So not that far-fetched. You should look into that. I know a few people.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a great retirement move going from Venice Beach to Boston.
No, there's an L.A. campus.
Oh, there's an L.A.
campus? Yeah,
that's the
first thing I just thought of. If I could do it over the summer, I'd do it.
No, they have an L.A. campus, too.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah,
really?
Serious. Check it out. Yeah.
Wow.
Tell them Charles Rivers sent you.
Start banging right, co-eds right, going, you know what, honey? You're not funny. Sorry.
Well, being a writing professor, you know, your job is to break as many students as possible, you know? but is there anything particular, you know, I think I ask just about every comic that comes into Boston this question, but I'm always amused by it. Is there anything particular about Boston crowds that you like that you don't necessarily find in another part of a U.S. city?
Oh, yeah, Boston crowds are the best. They really are. They have tons of energy, and they're wise asses, and I don't think there's any topic that's off limits. You know, there's heckling for sure, but, you know, when you come out, I came up out of that scene, so I get it.
You did.
You know, somebody heckles, I can handle it. And I understand that a lot of times it's not coming from a bad place. It's just people are having fun, and they want to be a part of the party, and you just have to school them that they're not part of the party. They're at the party, and they don't have a speaking role.
Right. Leave the fourth wall alone.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Hands off. But no, it's very interesting because, I mean, my sense of humor personally, I mean, you know, come from a different generation. I'm not necessarily part of what I consider the new, I don't want to call it the new America, but you know, you know what I'm talking about in terms of,
getting offended.
I get it.
Yeah, but there's a lot of scrutiny via social media and everything. And it's just, it's going in a direction where, you know, I guess it's more sensitive towards people's needs. But then, you know, I remember when comedy didn't really hold any sensitivity. So how do you feel? Do you see comedy changing because of that? Or do you think there's just going to...
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, when Jerry Seinfeld says he's not doing colleges because they're too politically correct.
Right.
I mean, there's not, a safer comic out there.
There is
just a pro. Right. And, you know, totally inoffensive. So, you know, if he's having problems with it, then who isn't? It's just,
yeah.
You know, it's about the topic. You know, that they just categorically clam up when you hit a certain topic. And if you have a point of view that's not the same as the status quo, then you've got to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely, you got to navigate more. But, you know, that being said, it's just, that's what it is. You know, you got to still go there as a comic. You just got to find a way to make it work. You got to make your jokes that much stronger, or you got to make your delivery that much more commanding, but people don't feel that they have a say in it, that they should sit back and listen to somebody's point of view. That's ultimately what stand-up is you're listening to a funny guy who's got a point of view, and the gig is not to agree with it.
Well, exactly, and I think a lot of people have a problem laughing at things that they don't agree with. I mean, at some point, it seemed to happen overnight that, like, you know, what was once your grandfather's joke that, you know, everyone took lightly is now, if you repeat that, you're nothing but a racist. And I feel like every day I'm trying not to be a racist, but I don't know how good I am at it anymore.
Especially in the workplace.
You know, it's hard because of the blacks and the Jews. They make it hard to not be racist.
Right. Yeah.
But one of those probably books you a lot.
I blame everything on the Jews.
Well, yeah.
But anyhow, yeah. No, it's interesting, though, to see sort of how that has taken sort of a 360. You know, I think with everything, I think in the last maybe 10 years, everything's taken a 360. My point is, though, it's like you still, like, there's a lot of comics out there. You know, you bring up Andrew Dice Clay, for instance. You know, people still sort of associate him, even if he is touring, as a part of an era rather than somebody who's still a comic out there doing his material, you know. And Yeah,
but I mean, someone like that, like, if you're going to see a Dice show right now, you're paying, you know what you're going to get, you know?
Some don't, though. It's just, it's absurd. I can't get over it. Like, people go to these comedy shows, and they're like, I can't believe you said that. That's racist.
You don't get it, but you're laughing. That's what it's all about. Doesn't matter if it's funny. Doesn't matter if anybody gets it. It's funny. Hey, call it time you want. Laugh about it tomorrow. Laugh about it in an hour. Back, get it? You laughed again. You don't even know what you're laughing at. I don't know what I'm talking about. You don't know what you're laughing at, but it's fucking funny.
You're funny.
Exactly.
Greg, have you ever done like a real big show and gotten kind of, depending on the area, gotten kind of a hush across the crowd because of something you said?
Sometimes I'll do these corporate shows where it's a company that has me come and perform after dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to laugh because they don't want their boss seeing them laugh. Hmm. So if you do anything of color, nobody's going to, you know, get involved. So that's brutal because you've got like three topics to talk about. You know, you can talk about your kids and your car and puppies. And so, you know, everything else is off the table. So I've definitely stepped in shit on those shows and had to backpedal. And all of a sudden you're doing material from 15 years ago because it's the only clean shit you can think of.
I would never be able to do anything corporate. I could never work blue.
No.
Never.
When they offer you like 10 times as much money, it's like it's a trap, you know. But you realize like the reason why they're paying you so much is that, you know, you gotta do what they tell you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta take a Sharpie to your whole set.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So listen, I gotta jump on another interview right now.
That's fine. We appreciate your time.
So
my pleasure. I hope to see you guys in Boston.
Yeah, you'll see us. And like I said, you know, again, enjoy your time here. And you know, you're playing a great club. So you know,
yeah.
Thanks for keeping us on your radar.
Check out Greg Fitzsimmons at Laugh Boston this September 24th to the 26th.
You can get your tickets by calling 617-72-LAUGH, or you can go to laughboston.com and get your tickets there as well. All right.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Greg. Right. We love you, man.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, I love you, too. All right. Bye.
Oh, Greg Fitzsimmons just said he loves me.
He says that to everyone.
I love him.
That was the shit show.
Catch Greg Fitzsimmons this weekend, September 24th to the 26th at Laugh Boston. Call 617-72-LAUGH or go to laughboston.com for tickets.